Trust Business Lunch on WGN Radio. It's 1210. This is John Williams. Pete Zimmerman's the producer. Hi again. It's John Williams and happy Valentine's Eve's Eve. We hope you have a great weekend. And we'll get started here with Jared Dillon, a return guest to the Wintrust Business Lunch, the best-selling financial author. You can visit jareddillionmoney.com for advice and wisdom from him. He joins us now. Jared, welcome back. I hope you're well.
Hey, thanks. You too.
I know a lot of people are very interested. We talked about this earlier in our show this morning about the status of the stimulus, and my read on it is that without Republican support, it sounds like next month you could get $1,400 if you make $75,000 and $150,000 for couples. Those seem to be the numbers, right?
Yeah, that's about right, and that's going to cost about $600 billion that's going to get added to the deficit. You know, we're already off to a good start this year with the deficit. We're going to be putting up some pretty big numbers once we start adding infrastructure and a bunch of other stuff later this year.
Off to a good start, meaning if you wanted to make it really big, by golly, we're going to get that done.
Yeah.
Are we adding too much?
Yeah. I mean, you know, actually, there's an interesting statistic. The deficit right now is bigger than the total revenues that we take in.
Think about that for just a minute. The deficit is bigger than total revenues. Boy, talk
so
about
we're
being
spending,
upside down.
We're spending more than twice as much as what we take in at this point.
And I suppose some of the people that are making these decisions, senators and economists, know that fully well. And they're deciding, though, that the short-term gain is worth the long-term pain.
Yeah, we don't really know what the long-term pain is. There hasn't been any pain so far. I mean, that's really the discussion. And, you know, Janet Yellen, who is used to be chair of the Fed and is now Treasury Secretary, when she looks at this, she says, well, you know, 10-year interest rates are at about 1.1%, which are at generational lows. So why don't we take advantage of this opportunity to buy, to borrow at low interest rates and, take advantage of this opportunity.
What do you think of that?
You know, I have mixed feelings about it. You know, after a couple of years of this, we're going to have a debt to GDP ratio of about 120%, which is where about Italy is. You know, this is the question that plagues economists, because so far there has been no consequences to running up the debt. And, you know, we kind of have an academic idea of what the consequences might be at some point. We think we might get inflation, but you know, that just hasn't happened so far.
Is the problem not the $600 billion or the $1 trillion we're about to spend, but the $30 trillion we did beforehand? I understand people's desire to get some money back in the economy and get it rolling. And then you say, no, wait, it's $31 trillion, like they just approved $31 trillion. They didn't ask for $31 trillion. They asked for $900 billion or a trillion plus to get us over this hump, which is a very pressing, immediate need. The problem is what we did beforehand, right?
Yeah, it's the accumulation that's the problem. It's all the debt that we've run up over the years, especially, you know, since 2008. And the funny thing is that if you go back to when Obama was president and we did the $780 billion stimulus, which some people called the porculus, you know, the paving the roads over again and stuff like that, you know, that was a humongous number at the time. And now it's 12, 13 years later, and we're far exceeding those numbers.
Would you say then, I've got more questions about that. Let's pause here for just a minute. We'll pick it up there. You'll stay right there for us, correct?
Yeah.
Jared Dillon, the best-selling author, jareddillionmoney.com. 1219, this is the Wintrust Business Lunch. Jared Dillon from jareddillionmoney.com is talking to us about, well, just a moment ago, we were talking about the options for a stimulus. Nobody likes to be in the kind of debt that we're loading up here. What should we then do? What would your best bet be for this next round? Nothing or what?
Well, you know, my hope is that we'll get the vaccines distributed in the second half of this year and things will get back to normal and we won't have to do another stimulus. I mean, I think we had an earlier conversation about how, you know, we're sort of in this feedback loop where, you know, legislators pass stimulus and there's positive benefits that accrue to the stock market and the economy, and legislators could become addicted to constantly putting stimulus into the economy. And that's my concern, is that this becomes a pattern over time rather than just an emergency measure that we do once or twice and then we move on.
You would not be the first person on this show to suggest that the longer we wait, the less we should give, because the vaccine will be here and the economy will take care of itself. But they're talking about March, early March. Would you say no, forestall that?
No, I think early March is about the right time frame
for something, but maybe less generous than the Democrats have in mind.
Look, I think a $2,000 stimulus, which is what was discussed at the end of Trump's presidency, is probably the right number if that is the last stimulus. If we're going to be doing this again and again, then probably a smaller number.
You said that groceries, gas, airfare prices are going to be going up soon. What's going on here?
Yeah, so actually, it's funny. Right before I got on the show, I was looking up some flights to Miami in March, and flights are already getting more expensive. You know, a lot of people have received the vaccine already. Some people have COVID. They have some form of immunity, and people are going to be traveling again, and already airfares are going up. I call this the travel explosion, and people are going to be traveling in unprecedented numbers in the second half of this year. And you have the potential to see costs associated with this, you know, airline fares to go very, very high. And, just from what I saw on the internet a couple of minutes ago, they've already returned to equilibrium levels.
You mean pre-pandemic?
Pre-pandemic, yeah.
Do the rising prices for gas, groceries, and airplane tickets, is that a good thing or a bad thing?
Well, it's a function of supply and demand. You know, I'm not really concerned about the type of inflation that we're going to get relative to the economy getting back to normal. What I'm more concerned about is the monetary inflation that we could get just from the Federal Reserve doing all this quantitative easing, printing money. This money finds its way into the economy, and we create this lasting, durable inflation of about 3 or 4 or 5% that could last for many years.
What about buying a new home? I know you've been thinking about the housing market and how many people are borrowing and buying. Are they making mistakes along the way?
You know, some people have made the argument that the housing market is getting back to bubble territory where it was in 2006. You know, the median home price in the United States is about $320,000 right now, which is above the peak where it was in the 2000s. You know, homes are very expensive right now and they seem affordable because interest rates are so low, but, you know, housing prices are very high.
Yeah, but the advice on the street, I mean, everywhere, not, I don't mean Wall Street, is this is the time to buy. You can borrow money at 2.5%. If ever you were going to borrow money to buy a house, and you are, yeah, I know you don't like the price, but you wouldn't advise me against borrowing money now, would you?
The advice I would give to people is that if you can't afford a home with a 15-year mortgage, then you should not buy the house. If the only way you can afford a house is to buy it with a 30-year mortgage, then you shouldn't buy the house. It doesn't mean you have to get a 15-year mortgage, but it's just a pretty good measure of what you can afford.
Why do you say that? Why? Because most folks do think 30 years. Why is 15 your number?
Well, a 15-year mortgage is just a better financial product. First of all, you're amortizing principal much, much faster, and you're building equity much, much faster. Now, you can do that with a 30-year mortgage. You have the option to do that. You have a smaller payment, and you can contribute additional principal. But if somebody buys a 4,000 or 5,000 square foot home that they can't afford, and they're barely making the payments on a 30-year mortgage, then it will crowd out any savings that they could attempt to make.
I think that's a mistake a lot of people made in 2006, 7, and 8, but they thought that the values were going to go up, and that's why they were getting 110% loans. Do you think that these houses are going to appreciate? What's going to happen to the value of these homes we're buying right now?
I don't really have a view on whether, you know, the housing market is going to continue to appreciate from here. It kind of seems like interest rates want to go up a little bit. So it could be that prices are going to stall out pretty soon, but I don't really have a strong view on that.
What about the college loan business? There's a lot of discussion about debt forgiveness, forbearance, and the cost to college. What are your thoughts about that area?
You know, the student loan problem, I think, could be fixed by just doing a couple of very simple things. And one is to take the existing student loans that's on the government balance sheet and return them to private hands, sell them back to the private sector. And the, but the second, the most important thing is to make these loans dischargeable in bankruptcy. If somebody declares bankruptcy, they have to be able to discharge their student loans they can't currently. And the third thing we have to do is we have to have some means to check people's credit when they borrow, just like any other loan, just like credit cards or car loans or stuff like that.
A lot of people are suggesting, and I understand this is problematic, but or let's find a way to clip the interest that they're being charged, because some of them are paying 8% when you, obviously money's a lot less expensive right now. Is that possible?
You know, the reason that student loan interest is so high is that these are unsecured loans. They're not secured by a house. They're not secured by a car. There's no property behind that. There's nothing for a lender to seize. So interest rates on unsecured loans are already higher. And you could actually make the argument that the interest rates are too low when you look at them relative to other unsecured loans like credit cards, which are up about 19%.
Yeah, but you got people that have been paying for years and they haven't actually gotten below the original loan amount, you know?
One of the reasons that is because of income-based payment plans, which were instituted in about 2010.
Yeah.
And people can pay 10% of their income in student loan payments, which is too small, and they're barely covering the interest or not covering the interest at all.
Yeah, that's interesting. It's a double-edged sword, isn't it? We talk a lot about that payment plan and what your disposable income is, which is a very generous calculation for you, but then you never really attack the principal and sometimes don't even get below the principal and interest. The $10,000, what do you think of the possibility of that being forgiven for everybody?
Oh, I can't handicap that at all. I have no idea. I mean, I don't think Biden wants to touch this issue. I mean, I'm not really a political expert, but it seems like the politics of this are very toxic. And this is one of these issues that has the ability to energize Republicans going into the midterms. So I think Biden would prefer to let this pass through Congress, which it's not going to be able to do. So the soonest I think this is going to get addressed is in the midterms.
Well, there's a lot of talk about that. I had the feeling that was going to come down sooner. And I understand the toxicity, but it's also something that Biden and a lot of them campaigned on. I thought this was kind of a done deal from their perspective.
Yeah, it's not a done deal. It's a very tricky political issue. And we have, you know, about as divided a government as we can possibly have. So yeah, we got to wait till the midterms to see what's going to happen.
I take your point, although I think there's plenty of Republican kids out there who, given $10,000 to write off their loan, would happily take the money.
Yeah, there's been, you know, the Wall Street Journal editorial board did a piece about this recently. And one of the things they showed is that a $50,000 student loan forgiveness would go disproportionately to people with higher incomes.
Yeah.
Not to people with lower incomes.
I think that $50,000 thing is just absolute folly. You didn't ask me for my opinion, but that is divisive. Maybe we should find a way to help these people out. We're talking about over $1 trillion out there, and it really does keep these people from being as engaged to taxpayers as they could be, even though it would go to people who have a leg up. You would actually be asking people in lower income brackets to help subsidize the higher end that tend to get the college educations. And $50,000 is insane, but maybe there's a number. I mean, I do like the idea of unburdening some of these people from their loans. I just don't know the best way to do it.
Well, the average student loan balance in the United States is $22,000. So if you were to forgive $10,000, that would make a big difference to a lot of people.
Let's just one last thing. I've got a list here. Anything else you want to mention before I let you go, Jared?
Be careful of the stock market. It's kind of a bubble right now.
Oh, you think it's overvalued?
It's not even really a matter of valuation. Some of the stuff we're seeing is just insane. Penny stock volumes in the last month have been $72 billion. We're seeing tens of millions of call options trade in a single day. SPACs, Bitcoin, crypto. There is a huge amount of speculation out there just by ordinary people. E-Trade is opening 300,000 accounts a day. It's madness.
I saw that, I may be wrong about this, but it's something like this. The city of Miami is offering its employees their pay in Bitcoin if they want it. You have a thought about Bitcoin, its viability?
So I owned Bitcoin for a while, not to pat myself on the back, but I bought it around 10,000 and I sold it around 40,000. And I can't predict its viability. I think it's either going to be worth $1 million or it's going to be worth zero. And there's a couple scenarios in which it's worth zero. If the Fed comes out with its own digital currency that competes with Bitcoin, that could be one thing that does Bitcoin in.
Jared Dillian is the author and financial advisor, JaredDillianMoney.com. JaredDillianMoney.com. Thanks for your time today, Jared. We'll visit again.
Okay, thanks.
12:36 on the Wintrust Business Lunch, produced by Pete Zimmerman. This is John Williams. Listen to this now. I think a lot of people, boy, it doesn't take much of a talk show host to notice that folks are getting frustrated trying to figure out how to sign up for the vaccine. But there is some help out there, and it's from a firm called Get Set Up. Get Set Up. Lawrence Kosick joins us. He's the co-founder of Get Set Up. I'll give you the website in just a second. Lawrence, you're on WGN. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, John. Thank you very much for having me.
Tell me what your business does.
So Get Set Up is an interactive learning platform for older adults. We take a little bit of an different approach to it, though. We reskill and upskill older adults, mostly retired teachers, who then teach other older adults the things they need to learn to live happy, healthy, more connected lives. So it's a senior-to-senior model, teaching classes and interesting topics in a live, interactive way.
Right. So I could see how that would have an audience pre-pandemic, but now I guess people would like seniors to show seniors how to sign up for the vaccine, right?
Absolutely. I mean, we offer 200 plus interactive classes, and there's a lot of very popular classes, but nothing is more popular right now than learning how and where to go to sign up for the vaccine.
Now, it sounds like there's other platforms like this, Masterclass, et cetera. Are you geared specifically for seniors, topics of interest to them then?
Yeah, we are very specific to seniors. So all of our teachers, we call them guides. They are all over 60, and they teach other older adults just like them. So it's a similar cadence, pace, empathy, mm-hmm. where the learners can feel comfortable, make mistakes, ask questions, make new friends. It's quite comfortable and geared towards older adults.
It's funny because my folks are alive in their late 80s and mid-90s, and I've watched people explain things to them, medically or household, and they talk too fast, and they don't talk loud enough, and they don't look at them. And my parents aren't fools, but they don't digest information that quickly anymore. And it's frustrating for me to watch that. And it sounds like you know what I'm talking about.
Absolutely. I mean, that's the exact problem that we're solving. You know, it's great for a millennial to try and teach something to an older adult, and oftentimes they're successful. But there's a magic that occurs when you have, you know, one older adult spending time and teaching, you know, another older adult or a small group, because again, the patience, the cadence, the timing, it's so much more comfortable and disarming, so that somebody who's been hesitant to learn about tech feels more comfortable and can do so.
Yeah. And you're not afraid to sound like a fool. Well, what are they teaching each other about the vaccine signups?
Well, I think that there's a lot of information out there. And I think, you know, older adults, I think all of us are trying to figure out, you know, what is the legitimate source for this information? Which are the correct websites to go to? When we get to those websites, how do we browse to find, you know, the correct information, whether it be by, you know, county, et cetera? Do we call an 800 number? Do we fill out a form? How do we fill out that form? What are the important, you know, data points to make sure that we get in that form so that we understand if we're going to be contacted by phone or by email mm-hmm. or by mm-hmm. text? Yeah. And we walk them through that. So we overcome sort of that technology hesitation, as well as guide them to the correct place to find the legitimate government information.
How do these people interact? How does the teacher teach these people these things? Is it Zoom? Is it an online class? How does it happen?
Yeah, all of our classes are live interactive classes done on Zoom. And we have a team of operations folks who can help folks get into their first Zoom class if there's a technology challenge there. They can also dial in by phone. So if they have video, great. If not, they can call in by phone. And we do small and medium-sized group classes so that there can be a level of interactivity and people can ask the guide questions and they can talk and they can go back and forth. We believe that this demographic just learns so much better by doing and not by watching. And so it's important that we keep classes small enough so that there can be true interactivity.
Everybody learns better by doing. I get frustrated when someone tries to show me something and they have their finger on the mouse and I say, no, you can't say click down, go over here, do this. I said, stop. I don't know what I just saw. I don't know how that happened. And
right.
And I'm not as young as I once was, but even I need to have my hand on the mouse. What do you charge for this class or this service?
These classes are free. They can come to www.getsetup.io, and they will see a whole host of free classes that they can hop into and take. They can start with a vaccine class. If they're not ready to do that, they can hop into a basic orientation class where somebody will greet them, give them a tour of the website, show them some different classes that they might be interested in taking, and then help them sign up if they need some help.
It's an interesting domain, .io, getsetup.io, not com, not gov, not biz, getsetup.io, correct?
Getsetup.io. Getsetup.org also works. Either of those work. But yes, if they use www.getsetup.io, that will work. There's also an 800 number they can call. I'll give that to you as well.
Yeah, go ahead.
It's 888-559-1614, 888-559-1614, and somebody will also help them get into a class if they call that number as well.
One last thing. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch. How do you make money on this? How have you monetized this?
So the way we've approached this is partnering with local and state governments and other organizations who care about this demographic, like healthcare and Medicare companies. So they have provided a lot of the funds required for us to offer these classes so that they can be free or inexpensive to the end user.
So will I see ads then from these people?
Nope, you don't see ads. You'll see sponsored classes, but you'll see no overt selling, no promotion. It's very much meant to be sort of a learning environment.
Getsetup.org, getsetup.io. Larry, I think you've solved, Lawrence, I think you've solved a lot of problems for a lot of people.
Well, thank you, John. We're doing our very best. There's lots more work to do, but we're happy to help.
Lawrence Kosick is the co-founder of Get Set Up. Okay, we'll stay in touch, Lawrence. Thanks for joining us today.
Thanks very much, John. Appreciate it.
On the Team Hochberg phone line on the Wintrust Business Lunch on WGN Radio. At 12:43, let's continue with the business news. Here is Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. Hundreds of assistant store managers will be allowed to join a lawsuit against Jewel Osco for improperly denying them overtime pay. That decision came as a judge denied the company's motion to dismiss the suit, which was filed by one Chicago employee. The lawsuit claims assistant managers spend most of their day doing the same work as other employees who do qualify for overtime. The hedge fund that owns a large stake in Tribune Publishing is in talks to buy shares of the company it doesn't already own. The Wall Street Journal says Alden Global Capital is in talks to buy a controlling stake of the company that owns the Chicago Tribune and the New York Daily News. People familiar with the talks, a deal could be reached this month, but negotiations are far from over. Zillow is acquiring Showing Time, a Chicago tech company that pioneered online scheduling for the residential real estate industry. Chicago Inno says the deal is worth $500 million. Showing Time was founded in 1999 and developed an online scheduling platform for home showings that helps real estate agents coordinate schedules and seamlessly book a confirmed home showing online. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
12:51 on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Folks, there are some donuts in our break room today, but I don't think that they are from Liberation Donuts, because Liberation Donuts, if I'm not mistaken, is the only vegan bakery in Chicago. And here to talk about that is Natalie Slater from Upton's Naturals. She's the marketing manager, and it's there that you get the donuts. Natalie, thanks for joining us. You're on the air. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks.
Is that true? Are you? Is this the only all-vegan bakery in Chicago?
We are the only all-vegan donut shop in Chicago.
Donut shop. Okay. Why that niche? And I'm frankly surprised because I know it's a very popular space for food these days. You'd think there would be more, but talk to me about who and why you all are.
Sure. Well, Upton's Naturals is a vegan brand. We've been in business almost 15 years. We're best known for our meat alternatives that are sold in grocery stores across the country and around the world. In Chicago, we also have a vegan restaurant called Upton's Break Room. And more recently, we opened the vegan donut shop, Liberation Donuts. So we're we're founded by a longtime vegan, and a lot of us at the brand are vegan. So we're always looking for a good reason to open a business that serves the type of things that we want to eat.
Why do you call it Liberation?
So it's actually a nod to the animal liberation movement, which is, you know, a big reason why most of us at the brand got involved with plant-based foods in the first place was a desire to help animals.
Is that a challenge for people who are vegan then? I didn't think about this, but if you want to get donuts and you are true to your cause, I can't go to any donut shop? That would somehow sort of violate my compact here?
Yeah. I mean, a lot of donuts are made with animal products like eggs or even lard. And even the donut shops that have, you know, maybe one or two vegan options, you're still pretty limited. It's no fun to only be able to get the one donut that
yeah,
you can
right.
eat. So
right. Here's the vegan thing there. And yet you guys feature, 12 or 14 different flavored donuts every day or something like that?
Yeah, we have a rotating variety of about 12 to 14 daily. And we do lots of special limited edition boxes that are available for pre-order.
Punchki Day is coming up, right, in Chicago?
Yes, we are doing vegan punchki.
So what's the date on that? When is that?
It's this coming Tuesday.
Yeah, right. So then talk to me about that, because I've seen the punchkis, the different ingredients on the inside. Is that what you do?
Yeah, so, you know, punchki traditionally is a way to sort of use up all of your butters and fats before Lent comes around. And it's not really something that we have a big problem with in a vegan diet. We're not necessarily trying to use up all of our butter and lard, but it's definitely a Midwest tradition. And so we decided to make our own version. And so they're a raised yeast donut, and they're filled with pastry cream, and they have rose glaze. And then we're also doing powdered sugar ones that are filled with cherry pie filling.
Yeah, I was just going to say, can you do jellies and jams? I guess you're not putting bacon on these things, because I know that's been a popular trend. But
right.
I think, frankly, we've crossed the line when we went there anyway. But just sell me a few more donuts. Give me a couple of other flavors or the way you dress them up.
Sure. Well, our best-selling donut is called For Greta, and it's named after the company founder's rescue German Shepherd, Greta. She loves to eat vegan whipped cream, and so this donut is filled with vegan whipped cream and fresh strawberries, and it's by far our bestseller. It's just really pretty. People love to take them home and take pictures of them before they devour them. We have another bestseller is actually named after another dog in our family, which is Flapjack, named after a rescue dog that we found near our factory. That one is a maple glazed donut with a spiced chocolate crumb. We do, some of the traditional like sprinkles and chocolate and everything you'd expect from a donut shop. And then we do some really unusual flavors like cherry rosemary. We do a pineapple brulee that's really popular.
Mm. I told her to sell us some donuts. I think she just did. Okay, we'll close with how do we get them. Give me the store location and hours. But before you answer that, I'm not a vegan. Will it be a compromise for me? I mean, that all sounds good, but the dough, I guess, is going to feel or be different. Will it taste good? Will non-vegans appreciate them?
We have had lots of people walk in the door without knowing that we were a vegan donut shop. you know, send us emails about how much they loved what they got and be absolutely shocked when they found out that there were no animal products. So,
right. But wait, I don't like vegan foods, but I guess I do. What do you know?
This is our Trojan horse. We're going to get you into vegan food.
Westtown is where you're located, 2054 West Grand Avenue. Is that right?
That's right. And we're open Monday through Thursday, 11 o'clock until 7:30 at night. And then on Friday through Sunday, we open a little earlier at 9 a.m. and close at 7:30. And on the weekends, we have a really awesome deal where if you come in before 11 o'clock, you can get a mixed dozen for only $25.
If I'm Googling you, Liberation Donuts works?
Yes, liberationdonuts.com.
Natalie, well done. Thanks for your time today and good luck to you.
Thanks so much. Have a great weekend.
Natalie Slater is Uptown's Naturals Marketing Manager and obviously over at Liberation Donuts.